Today is August 2nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Philip Alexio in Washington. Coming up, President Trump imposes new sanctions on Russia for its election interference, and there's now a new chief of staff running the White House.
You can't run the White House the way you run a Manhattan family Manhattan real estate firm.
Also ahead, the UN calls the arbitrary arrests of Venezuela's opposition leaders illegal. It's all on today's International Edition. President Donald Trump imposing new sanctions on Russia, signing legislation today with penalties aimed at Moscow for its interference in last year's U.S. election designed to help him win the White House. VOA's White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman at the White House explains what the objective is for the United States and the effects the sanctions will have on Russia.
Well, it's obvious that the president wasn't exactly thrilled with signing this sanctions bill. He declared it significantly flawed and has clearly unconstitutional provisions. He says it limits the executive flexibility and makes it harder for the United States to strike good deals, and he claims it'll drive China, Russia, and North Korea much closer together. But he said despite the problems, he's signing it for the sake of national unity. And he also said he had expressed his concerns to Congress about it, and that as a result of that, there were some changes made that made him accept assigning this. But obviously, he has major qualms about it, and it does set some new restrictions on American companies working especially with Russian gas and oil companies, and it codifies sanctions that were imposed by President Obama for Russia's meddling in last year's election, and it makes it quite difficult for the president really to have a free hand in this. So that's the overall scope of what this is about.
So is there an understanding as to why legislation was passed like this? Because it was sort of pressuring the president to go ahead and do this.
Well, there was nearly unanimous consent
right.
in both houses of Congress, and that allows lawmakers to override any veto of this bill if the president had gone in that direction. And obviously, he knew that it was futile, and probably didn't want to face more scrutiny and immense criticism if he did go ahead and veto this. Now, we should mention that even before this got signed, Moscow was taking retaliatory action, seizing a couple of American diplomatic properties, similar with what the United States did to Russia during the closing days of the Obama administration. And it also ordered a cut of overall staff at U.S. embassies and consulates in Russia by about 755 people. Now, notably, the president has not made any mention of that in these statements that came out today or in any other comments.
So how stringent are these sanctions? What's understood to be, how much will it end up hurting Russia?
Definitely targeting this the very lucrative oil and gas sector
okay.
of Russia is something that will be seen as is harmful, I think, by the Russian government and in the industry.
Does this legislation just affect Russia, or is there anybody else involved?
Well, definitely the headlines are about Russia, but it also targets Iran and North Korea. And the president, in the statements that were issued by the White House today, said that this sends a clear message to Iran and North Korea that the American people aren't going to tolerate what he calls their dangerous and destabilizing behavior. He says the United States is going to continue to work closely with allies to check what he calls Iran and North Korea's malignant activities.
That's VOA Steve Herman reporting from the White House. Well, as things happen in Washington today, President Donald Trump's White House is now under new management. Retired Marine Corps General John Kelly has taken over as White House Chief of Staff after serving as the Secretary of Homeland Security. Now, Trump supporters and critics alike are wondering if Kelly can use his military experience to bring a sense of order to the White House that's been rocked by turmoil throughout much of its first 6 months in office. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more from Washington.
We just swore in General Kelly.
After a chaotic few weeks, President Trump has turned to former General John Kelly to get his White House back on track.
We're going to work hard, and we're going to make America great again. It's all about making America great again. That's what we're going to do.
Kelly replaces Reince Priebus, who clashed with the president's communications chief, Anthony Scaramucci.
I love the president.
Scaramucci was fired Monday, Kelly's first day on the job, a signal that he's serious about ending months of White House infighting. Author Chris Whipple has written a book on the important role of the White House chief of staff.
You can't run the White House the way you run a Manhattan family Manhattan real estate firm with a whole bunch of advisors coming and going and no chain of command and nobody empowered to carry out your agenda.
Whipple says Kelly's success will depend on the extent of his influence.
Every president learns, often the hard way, that you cannot govern effectively without empowering your White House chief of staff as first among equals in the White House to do a whole host of things, but most importantly, to execute your agenda and to tell you what you don't want to hear.
The president insisted in a tweet that there was no chaos at the White House. But during his first 6 months in office, Trump has been plagued by low poll ratings and the Russia investigation. Trump also faces a stalled congressional agenda in the wake of the failed health care effort in the Senate.
With the incredible men and women of Youngstown.
Trump continues to court his base, and many of his core supporters remain loyal.
We just need to support President Trump. He's doing the best he can.
Some analysts suggest Kelly may try to rein in the president, especially his habit of venting on Twitter. Trump's approval rating has ticked up during quiet periods, says analyst Kyle Kunde.
If he could ever sort of discover some tranquility, I suspect that the public might be a little bit more forgiving of him. But that certainly hasn't happened, or at least hasn't happened a whole lot during his presidency.
Kelly will join Trump in the spotlight in the days ahead as the 45th president looks to find his political footing after a difficult first 6 months in office. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Okay, time now, 13 minutes past the hour. We enter our social media segment with reporter Andrew Palcheski to find us or tell us what's trending online today.
Well, one of the issues that Jim was talking about in that report was reining in President Trump on Twitter, and that's a task that new Chief of Staff John Kelly may have to undertake. We're getting some information and some word about another effort to try to rein in President Trump on Twitter, but this request is coming from China in an editorial that is published there. And it might be the first instance where a foreign country has talked about President Trump's tweeting in such stark terms. And the one line from this editorial that's all over China says that Trump is quite a personality and he likes to tweet. However, emotional venting cannot become the guidance for solving nuclear issues on the Korean Peninsula. So some very strong words from China. It's worth noting that this editorial comes just a couple days after President Trump tweeted about China, took aim at them on Twitter, talked about North Korea on Twitter. So perhaps they saw that and they weren't happy about that and they issued this editorial. But again, it's very stark words and perhaps the first instance where a country or media in a country have so specifically talked about the president's tweeting.
I guess they're going to go to war with Trump, huh? With this tweet.
You know, no response from President
Good
Trump yet to this editorial, but I'm eager to see if he responds to it on Twitter.
What else we got?
Well, Prince Philip is marking the end of an era. The husband of Britain's Queen Elizabeth II is retiring from public life after 65 years of his wife on the throne and more than seven decades in the public eye. So lots of remembrances for him. He's not going anywhere. He just won't be in the public eye so much. He'll presumably still appear with the Queen occasionally at major events. But lots of people talking about the many years of service that he's given, remembering him fondly in the UK. Also remembering some of the statements that he's made where he's put his foot in his mouth a little bit. Some sexist, racist comments. People say he's always one to speak his mind. Once called himself the world's most experienced plaque unveiler, because that was what he did a lot of times. He would go off, represent the Queen, unveil plaques and statues and things at different dedications. So he is retired, plaque unveiling no more. He gets to have a little bit of retirement. At the age of 96, I think it's well-deserved.
Yeah, 96. Boy, he's going to miss those plaques, huh?
He might have to set up a fake plaque at Buckingham Palace. He can just unveil it at his leisure.
Boy, I hate to lose that job.
Right.
All right, Andrew Prochesky, thank you very much. Always a lot of fun. All right, you're listening to International Edition. Among the top stories in the world, U.S.-backed forces press deeper into the southern Raqqa city. Families linked to ISIS face an uncertain future in an Iraqi camp. The Papua New Guinea parliament re-electing the prime minister in Somalia. They'll be opening its first journalism school in 26 years. Expanded coverage of these stories and more, all on VOANews.com website, and also go to our VOA mobile app. UN Human Rights Chief Zayed Raad al-Hussein is calling for the immediate release of two prominent Venezuelan opposition leaders who were taken into custody. The men who had been under house arrest were seized by authorities during raids on their homes early on Tuesday. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the High Commissioner's office in Geneva.
UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Zayed Raad al-Hussein says he's deeply concerned that opposition leaders Leopoldo Lopez and Antonio Ledezma once again were in jail. The Venezuelan Supreme Court revoked their house arrests, claiming they were planning to flee. The High Commissioner's spokeswoman, Ravina Shamdasani, tells VOA the UN Working Group on Arbitrary Detention has declared the detention of both Lopez and Ledezma to be arbitrary and says they never should have been arrested.
It is absolutely illegal under international human rights law to arrest somebody and detain them arbitrarily. Now, the UN Working Group on Arbitrary Detention is the authority on these matters, and they make their decisions after a careful review of the facts and an analysis of the law behind it.
Shamdasani says the High Commissioner is worried the excessive use of force will worsen the volatile situation in Venezuela. She adds at least 10 people were killed over the weekend while demonstrating against the election of a new body to rewrite the Constitution, an act the opposition considers undemocratic.
We've received many reports of violent house raids that have been carried out by security forces in various parts of the country. So the High Commissioner is calling on the government to ensure that it does not use excessive force in relation to people who disagree with them.
Shamdasani says the High Commissioner is urging the Venezuelan government to carry out prompt, independent investigations in cases where excessive force may have been used. She says the Human Rights Office will be closely monitoring events in the country. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The Trump administration is considering whether to initiate action that could lead to the United States imposing tariffs and other trade restrictions on Chinese imports. News outlets saying that President Donald Trump will direct U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer to begin an investigation of China's trade practices under a section of the 1974 Trade Act. The section is aimed at protecting U.S. industries from unfair trade practices of foreign countries. Simon Lester is a trade policy analyst with the Cato Institute, and he explains where all this is going.
Well, in general, President Trump has tried to talk tough with China. His overall goal, I think, is to bring down the U.S. trade deficit with China. Now, many people, including myself, are skeptical that that's a goal worth pursuing, but I think ultimately that's what he wants to see. He wants to see U.S. businesses sell more to China and perhaps Chinese businesses sell less to the U.S. But either way, he wants the trade deficit down, and he thinks the way to do that is to address certain trade barriers in China. And the process that they're talking about initiating would be a way to identify some of those barriers and possibly take action against them, although there are a variety of ways that could be done. It's not clear exactly what this investigation would lead to. It could lead to the unilateral imposition of tariffs. That would be a controversial and contentious approach. There are other things that he could do instead, like file a claim at the WTO or perhaps some other creative solution.
So the president keeps talking about this trade imbalance with China, and yet really it's something I don't think a lot of people understand. It's really the United States buying a product, giving cash to China, and China giving the U.S. a product. Kind of like going to the grocery store. You go to the grocery store, you give them some cash, and you get a product. I mean, technically, yes, that's a trade imbalance if that's the way he's looking at it. Is that a fair statement?
That's a fair statement, and that's my view of things. Yes, these are individual decisions made by U.S. consumers to buy products from Chinese sellers. There's nothing inherently wrong with that. The trade balance, many people get confused about what it is. So if China is selling more to us than we're selling to them, and they end up with some extra dollars, what they do with them is reinvest them in the United States. And that, in general, is a good thing for us if China is loaning us money if we need it because we run a budget deficit, or if they build a new factory or they buy a U.S. asset, that money all comes back to the United States. So this isn't money flowing abroad and us losing it. It's just part of, as you said, individuals making decisions to buy and sell, and the money isn't lost. It comes back to us through Chinese investment.
So the other problem that he has, obviously, is that, okay, let's say that's not the problem. The problem is they're producing products so cheaply, and the United States cannot produce products as cheaply as China. But his argument is that the United States has lost certain kinds of manufacturing base over the years, and he wants to get some of that back. Is that something he can do? Is that realistic?
I don't think it's very realistic. I think that, you know, that there are real costs to imposing tariffs. I mean, the idea would be we can impose a 20% tariff on Chinese steel, and that will mean we're going to produce more steel here in the United States, and that means jobs for Americans. But I think what you have to see are a couple things. One is the other side of that. The higher price steel that Americans pay for, you know, a lot of U.S. companies use steel, so if suddenly they have to buy more expensive steel, we might see job losses in industries that consume steel. What you're also going to see is probably a shift not from Chinese production to U.S. production, but maybe Chinese production to the Vietnamese production or some other country. There are a lot of countries out there who can produce things, produce certain products more cheaply than the United States. So it's not really as simple as just we're going to punish China and that will bring jobs back to the United States.
Now, is it fair to say that China does engage in unfair trade practices?
I think that's fair to say. I think to the extent that this investigation tries to document that and identify that, I think that's not a bad thing. I mean, for years, the United States has complained about certain, Chinese practices, intellectual property theft being a big one, and we've brought a WTO complaint about this before. This is nothing new and radical to have the Trump administration, you know, pursue this same idea, and I think to the extent we can really identify what the problems are and come up with practical solutions, you know, what exactly do we want the Chinese government to do to protect intellectual property more effectively? I think that can all be productive. It's just a question of the approach. You know, how is it unilateral tariffs? Is it a WTO complaint? You know, what's the effective way to get China to change its policies in these areas?
And if you had to guess, closing here, what President Trump would like to have done, and what you think he can get done with regard to trade with China, what do you think that might realistically be?
It's very difficult to make these judgments now. You know, we're sort of hearing statements about the ultimate outcome he wants. I see just two paths. I mean, there's the confrontational path of, you know, abandoning the trading system and imposing tariffs unilaterally, and then there's the sort of playing within the rules path where we bring complaints to the WTO and sort of get multilateral endorsements for taking action against China. And I'm just hopeful that we'll go down the latter path and that we won't blow up the trading system in our effort to deal with these, you know, sometimes real trade barriers.
All right, Simon Lester with the Cato Institute. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
And you're listening to International Edition.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
Boy, it's getting hot in Europe. They are experiencing some extreme weather conditions, including heat waves and flooding. The heat causing outbreaks of wildfires in southern countries such as Croatia and Italy, Montenegro and Portugal and southern France even, and drought has led to shortages of water in many of the areas. With more on all of this is VOA's Zlatica Hoke.
Visitors to Croatia's Adriatic beaches sit under the umbrellas and take frequent cooling dips in the sea. With temperatures reaching 40 degrees Celsius in the shade, many say they avoid the beach from late morning till late afternoon.
At midday, it's really hot. We stay away. We have to take care of ourselves.
In the afternoon, we sleep. We swim in the morning and in the evening, from 6 p.m. until 8:30 p.m.
With hot air spreading from northern Africa, emergency services have warned elderly people and patients with chronic heart diseases to avoid leaving their homes. Last month's fire in the coastal city of Split destroyed thousands of hectares of forest and agricultural land and at least 15 homes. Some coastal cities were hit by storms with unusually high waves. The situation is hardly better further north. In the Czech capital Prague, locals and tourists tried to stay cool on Tuesday in paddle boats on the Vltava River. The Czech Meteorological Institute warned the heat wave could continue till the end of the week. Geneva-based World Meteorological Organization says the extreme weather conditions this summer are exceptional.
We'll find few of such extreme events in the past 150 years, but in the recent three decades, 30 years, we have been recording more and more events like these ones.
The organization says the temperatures will continue to rise if nations fail to curb activities that contribute to global warming. It is calling for preparations to protect citizens from extreme weather conditions, such as early warning systems, shelters, and emergency rescue teams. The Vienna Zoo has taken measures to make the summer heat easier on its residents. Its new elephant bathing pool was completed just in time for the summer. The pool features a built-in walk circuit so the animals can walk without getting out of water. Zlatica Hoc, VOA News, Washington.
And that is our show for today. You've been listening to International Edition. We're everywhere. You can find us at voanews.com. You can like us on Facebook at VOA Now. You can follow us on Twitter at VOA/IE. I'm Philip Alexio here in Washington. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you a little bit later on tonight.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States strongly condemns North Korea's launch of an intercontinental ballistic missile, the second in the month of July, in blatant violation of multiple United Nations Security Council resolutions that reflect the will of the international community. The United States rejects the regime's claim that these tests and these weapons ensure North Korea's security. In reality, they have the opposite effect. By threatening the world, these weapons and tests further isolate North Korea, weaken its economy, and deprive its people. All nations should take a strong public stance against North Korea, said U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, by maintaining and strengthening U.N. sanctions to ensure North Korea will face consequences for its relentless pursuit of nuclear weapons and the means to deliver them. As the principal economic enablers of North Korea's nuclear weapon and ballistic missile development program, China and Russia bear unique and special responsibility for this growing threat to regional and global stability, he said. U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Nikki Haley called on China to exercise its unique leverage over North Korea to compel a return to denuclearization negotiations. China must decide whether it is finally willing to take this vital step, she said. The time for talk is over. The danger the North Korean regime poses to international peace is now clear to all. In the meantime, the United States will take all necessary steps to ensure the security of the American homeland and protect its allies in the region. In that regard, just 2 days after the latest North Korea missile launch, the U.S. military tested the Terminal High Altitude Air Defense, or THAAD, anti-ballistic missile system in Alaska. The defense system successfully intercepted a ballistic missile fired by an Air Force plane over the Pacific Ocean. Authorities said the exercise was successful and will help the U.S. stay ahead of the evolving threat. The United States, said Secretary Tillerson, seeks the peaceful denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula and the end to belligerent actions by North Korea. As we and others have made clear, we will never accept a nuclear-armed North Korea nor abandon our commitment to allies and partners in the region.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.